So today we will look at some details of multimedia applications. This afternoon we'll give some demonstrations. In fact, even this morning we'll see some demonstrations of some of the programs you're using in your assignment. So we'll see several demonstrations of using TC, for example. But this morning we'll mainly lecture on or introduce multimedia applications and some examples this morning and some more examples this afternoon. The last topic was on two different topics last week. There was quality of service and the delivery mechanisms, unicast, multicast, broadcast, and so on. In particular, multicast, where we send from one to many, and quality of service was about giving some traffic priority over other traffic. And there are different mechanisms for doing that. For example, giving priority to a voice call through the internet compared to web browsing. Both of those mechanisms are suited for delivering multimedia applications across a network. So they can assist in making the performance of multimedia applications better. But we're going to talk about some of the characteristics of different multimedia applications. So we'll try to define what we mean by multimedia applications, at least for this topic. Talk about the technologies that are used for delivering such applications across the internet. If we want to watch video over the internet, how does it work? And some of the issues in making sure that those applications perform well, such that users are happy when they use them. First, we'll go through the different characteristics and requirements of various multimedia applications and compare them. What does a user require for such an application to work well? And then we'll go looking first at voice, then at streaming audio and video, and then finish on IPTV. That is television over the internet. Some of the characteristics and requirements here you may have seen in the previous course, but I think it's worth repeating again. So let's try and classify different multimedia applications. What do we mean when I say multimedia? Well, some examples include, or some classifications include, the directions of communications. So a one-way communication application is where we're sending information in one direction. Listening to the radio or music, so sending music from or audio from one server to one or multiple clients. Viewing recorded or live video. So this is what we're streaming. Streaming either stored or live audio or video. Stored means it's not live. Live means it's the event is happening now, and it's then being transmitted immediately or immediately across the network to the people who want to view that event. Stored is, for example, it's being recorded and then played back later. It makes a difference as to what the requirements are, but generally referred to as streaming. One way from a server to people who want to view that content or listen to that content. And then we have two-way bidirectional communications, where we have voice calls, for example, telephone across a communications network across the internet, or video calls. And these are referred to as interactive applications because it's two or multiple people interacting at the same time. When you're in a voice call, there's two people talking. So there's data going in both directions, and there needs to be some synchronization of that communication. When you're talking to someone on the telephone, there's some synchronization as to who talks. One person talks, and then the other person talks. So that introduces requirements on the applications that interaction can occur smoothly. Sometimes multimedia applications are referred to as real-time applications. What that means is that the real-time part means the sender and receiver, when they communicate across a network, as it's as if they're in the same location, physical location communicating. So when I talk to you, we're communicating in, I'm streaming information, audio to you. If we want real time, then if you are on the other side of the world and we're using a network to talk, then when I talk here in this room, it's as if you hear me immediately where you are on the other side of the world. So that the communications is in real time. That means we have special requirements like very small delay. Less than 1 second normally. And also small jitter. That is small variance in the delay. So just some classifications of multimedia applications. What are other applications? Well, other web browsing, file transfer, email, database access, instant messaging, all the applications that we use on a regular basis, which are not really involving transmitting audio and video across a network. In these other applications, reliability is normally essential. If I send an email, that email must be delivered to the other side with no errors. And that's why we use mechanisms like TCP, because even if there are errors in the network or on links, TCP will recover. It will retransmit until the email is delivered to the other side with no errors. These applications can tolerate large or varying delays. Large may be a matter of, or some can tolerate large delays in terms of a matter of seconds, even tens of seconds, and can tolerate a variance of delay, that is a jitter that is reaching 1 second or more. Web browsing, for example, needs a reasonably short delay, that is the response time of when you send a request to a web server until the web page is sent back. You'd expect around in the order of seconds, less than seconds. Sometimes in some websites we can tolerate several seconds. But we don't care if the first request takes 1.1 second and the second request takes 1.5 seconds. That variance of 400 milliseconds does not make much difference for our web browsing. It will make a difference for voice communications and video communications. Downloading a file. Delay is not a big issue. If I press, I'm going to download a 1 gigabyte file, I know it's going to take tens of minutes. Then I press download. If it takes 5 seconds to start, I don't really care, because in total it's going to take 10 minutes. That extra 5 seconds to start the download is of little importance to me. What we care about with file downloads is the speed at which it's transferred. So the initial delay is not so significant with a file download, for example. Email, another example. Emails can be delayed minutes, hours, even days in some cases. We survive. Multimedia applications, on the other hand, are usually delay sensitive and loss tolerant. Delay sensitive means that if there are large delays or large jitter, then the applications become unusable. The users cannot experience what they desire. Loss tolerant means that if some data is lost, the applications are still usable. If you're streaming video from a server to a client, that video is transmitted as packets. And if each packet represents just a small portion of the video or a portion of a frame being displayed, where frames are updated 25 per second, if you lose one packet, then it may mean a very small change in the quality of the video that we see at the client. Maybe some of the pixels are not clear. We can tolerate that for a number of video applications. That is, we can still view the video. So even if we lose some data, the application still works okay. Therefore, so that makes it good in that we don't have to worry as much about lost data, whereas the other applications, we care about getting data delivered 100% to the destination. With multimedia applications, sometimes that's not necessary. So some characteristics of some of the different applications. If we look at voice communications, when people are talking, then we know something about the physical attributes, that is, the frequency when people talk ranges from 100 hertz up to 10,000 hertz, but the majority is around 300 hertz to 3,400 hertz. So here, this is 100 hertz, this is 10,000 hertz. When we speak, the speech is this solid blue line, is the approximate range of frequencies when we speak. So we need to have a communications channel that will support the delivery of those frequencies. And the basic communications channel we have is the telephone system. And telephone systems, traditional systems using copper lines, support delivery of frequencies in this range, the telephone channel. That is the majority of our speech. Some of the very low frequencies when we talk may not be heard on the other side. So even when I speak, and if I have a very low frequency, the telephone channel will not transmit that to the other side. But still the other person can understand what we're saying. So it's suitable. And other applications, for example, music has a much wider range of frequencies compared to plain voice. And therefore, if you want to transmit music across a network, we need to be able to support the transmission of those frequencies. So this just illustrates from our knowledge of when we transmit the analog voice or audio, then when we're talking about a communications network like the internet, we transmit packets with bits. So we need to convert that analog data into digital data. And just an example or a reminder of how we may do that, here's some analog signal, say some portion of voice, and what we do to convert that to bits is to sample that signal at regular intervals, take a sample, a measurement at this point in time, a measurement at this point in time, and so on, and record the level of that sample. If we divide, say the minimum level is here and the maximum is here, we divide that evenly, say 16 different levels. We record a level, map it to a number, and then map that to a binary value. And we do that for each sample, and this is our digital data that we need to transmit across our network. So just an example that we convert our analog data into digital data by sampling that. With two different variables involved. How often do we sample? The sampling frequency or sampling rate, and how many levels do we have? The idea is that when I talk, I'm generating this analog signal. If I was using a digital transmission channel, for example, if this microphone was digital, then what it would do is it would take my analog voice, do some sampling like this, create bits, zeros and ones, transmit those zeros and ones across the network, and same with a mobile phone, it uses digital so that the receiver, the receiving mobile, converts those bits back to some analog signal that is then played on the microphone, played on the speakers at the receiver. The idea is that, or the goal is that what I say is exactly what is heard at the receiver. But when we reproduce the analog output at the receiver, we can only use the digital data that we receive. So, depending upon the sampling rate and the number of levels, the reproduction at the receiver, the quality of the reproduction at the receiver may vary. A way to illustrate that is on the next slide. We'll come back to that description. Just an example here. Here's an example with different sampling rates and different number of levels. Imagine the input is a pure sine wave, so a perfect sine wave. And what we've done is sampled that sine wave at different rates or different intervals, ranging from here are 50 samples per second. These go down to 4 samples per second. And also varying the number of levels. So if the sine wave went from minus 1 to plus 1, then we divided that space into multiple levels. In this case, we had 100 different levels. In this case, 4 different levels, which would be minus 1, minus 0.25, minus 0.33, plus 0.33, plus 1. So 4 different levels there. So this is the illustration of the output at the receiver. The input at the transmitter is a perfect sine wave. The output at the receiver and what is played is shown here for those different variables. Here we see the impact of varying the number of levels. Sampling rate is the same, 50 samples per second. So we have many points along here. Case, the number of levels we have is much more than down here. We have many levels, and therefore when we reproduce the output at the receiver, it's a very close match to what would have been transmitted. When we have just 4 levels, even though we have many samples, the 4 levels that we can reproduce are either minus 1, plus 1, minus 0.33, and plus 0.33. Therefore, the reproduction at the receiver is not quite as accurate as the previous case. So reducing the number of levels reduces the quality at the receiver. And similar with the other variable. This is illustrating the number of samples per second changing. With just 10 levels being fixed, we start with 50 samples per second, and this is what we get at the output. And we reduce that down to 4 samples per second, and it's starting to look nothing like a sine wave. This is what would be played at the receiver, and we can see that the quality is, or the reproduction of the original input is not as good as the previous cases. So, reducing the sampling rate, in this case, will reduce the quality. Similar, reducing the number of levels will reduce the quality. So we care about the quality that the receiver receives. On the other side, we need to transmit this information across a network. Remember, what we're doing is that we're taking an analog signal, sampling that, converting to bits, transmitting those bits across a network. The more bits we have to transmit, the less efficient we are in using our network. If I could send my voice as 10 bits per second across a network and people can understand me, that would be great. But if I have to use 100,000 bits per second to transmit my voice across a network, then that is worse use of the network resources. We'd like to minimize the number of bits we have to transmit. Increasing the number of samples gives us better quality. This one, increasing the number of samples gives us better quality, but requires more bits to be transmitted across the network. Similar, increasing the number of levels gives us better quality, but requires more bits to be transmitted across the network. So there's the trade-off there, a trade-off between quality and use of the network resources. Maybe to demonstrate that with some numbers. Let's assign some numbers to what we've done here. What these are illustrating is this is 1 second of voice, 1 second of analog signal. Start at 0, finish at 1 second. 50 samples per second, there means there are 50 bars in this. And what have we got? If our input analog signal this is time 0 and this is time 1, that is 1 second. And let's say the minimum level here is minus 1 and the maximum is plus 1. So, when we sample this and convert it to bits, how many bits do we create in that 1 second? Let's consider several different cases. In this case, 50 samples per second. So we take 50 measurements in that 1 second. Each sample is one of the 100 different levels. So what we do is we divide this space of minus 1 to plus 1 into 100 different levels. I'm not going to draw them all. If we assign numbers, then maybe we could say that this is the first one is number level number 1, 2, up to level 100. So we divide this space into 100 different levels, and what we do is the first sample, measure the level, okay, it's 50, convert that to a binary number, and we have a set of bits. The next sample, maybe 51, convert it to a binary number, and we have our bits. How long is each sample in terms of number of bits? How many bits do we need for each sample in this case? A question. How many bits do we need for each sample if we have 100 different levels? Different levels, so we have possible values from 1 up to 100. We need to convert these decimal values into binary. How many bits do we need? Anyone want to have a guess? What do you think? 200 bits? No. What's your attempt? We have 100 different values. How many bits do we need to represent those 100 different values? Calculator. 8 bits, very close, but wrong, but close bits. If we, let's say the maximum value 100 in decimal, we need to convert that to a binary number. What's 100 in decimal? Well, we know that, I'm not going to convert it, but we know that with 6 bits, we have 64 possible values. With 7 bits, we have 128 possible values. So, if we have 7 bits, we can represent the numbers from 1 or from 0 up to 127 with 7 bits. We need to represent numbers from either 0 up to 99 or 1 up to 100. It doesn't make much difference. Therefore, we need 7 bits for each sample. So we take the first sample. Let's say it's 50. The decimal value, if we range from 1 up to 100, it's the middle point, 50. Convert that to a 7-bit binary number, which is what? If that's 50 in binary. So we convert the decimal to a 7-bit binary number. And then the next sample, if it's 51 in decimal, level number 51, we'd convert that to a 7-bit binary number. In this first case, we've got 50 samples per second. Every sample is represented by 7 bits. So in 1 second, we'd have 350 bits to be transmitted. 50 samples, 7 bits per sample, 350 bits in total over the period of 1 second. So, in this case, to transmit this portion of signal, we need to transmit 350 bits across our network from the source to the destination. That was in this case. Let's try this one. In this case, we have 4 samples per second and only 10 levels. With 10 levels, how many bits do we need? 4 bits. Yeah. 3 bits would give us 8 values, so we need more than that. 4 bits gives us 16 values. We need 10 values, but if we're using binary, we'd need to use 4 bits. So every sample is 4 bits. And we're only transmitting 4 samples per second. So we'd only transmit 16 bits in that 1 second. 4 samples, each of 4 bits. So if this is number 1, we'd need 350 bits to transmit. Number 2, this one down here, we'd need just 16 bits to be transmitted. 4 samples per second, each sample 4 bits, 16 bits to send across the network. This one is better in terms of quality at the receiver when we play back this signal, or we generate the analog signal from this data. It's going to be close to the original sine wave. This one's going to be poor quality at the receiver. But this one uses less bits to be transmitted. These bits need to be sent across our network. Let's say it's just a very trivial example, 16 bits per second sent across our internet. This one needs to transmit the same information, 350 bits per second. If I had a link from computer A to computer B, or system A to system B, which had a data rate of 1,000 bits per second, if the data rate or capacity of that link was 1,000 bits per second, if I was sending this audio using this method, I could support how many? 2 simultaneous audio transmissions at the same time. Because 2 would give us 700 bits per second. In this case, each one requires 350 bits per second. I could have 2 of these in parallel running at 700 bits per second. With 3, I would be above the capacity of 1,000. So my system or my network could support 2 audio transmissions using this method. But with this method, at the same time, I could transmit how many? So 1,000 divided by 16, which is 10 is 160 times 5. So about 50 audio transmissions at the same time. So with this approach, let's say we have 50 people talking at the same time across our one link, but at much lower quality. If we want high quality at the receiver, we can only have 2 people talking at the same time. So that's where our trade-off comes in. We need to increase the sampling rate and increase the number of levels to give higher quality, but if we do that, we reduce the number of simultaneous calls that we can have at the same time, or simultaneous transmissions at the same time. Or we increase the amount of network resources we need to transmit. So there we have a trade-off between quality and resources used. We'll go back and summarise that, but any questions? on that concept. The levels are, if we go back to PCM, a typical approach with converting analog into digital data is we sample at regular intervals, that's the sampling rate, and each sample we take some measurement, some discrete value, and then we convert that measured value into a binary value. So with this case has 16 levels. The first sample corresponds to level 1. Therefore, it gets the binary value 0001. This sample corresponds to level 5. It gets the binary value 0101. The more levels, as we saw in the other slide, the higher the quality will be at their output. But the more bits we need to transmit, as we saw here. So both those parameters impact on quality, the number of levels and the sampling rate. Any other questions on this concept? And then we'll try to summarize. This applies to voice and in general audio communications, where really we have analog input. We want to transmit it as digital data across our communications network. We only used a simple example. This is an example using pulse code modulation. There are other techniques to sample, but the same concepts apply. The sampling rate and the number of levels are the important factors. So, that summarizes. What sampling rate should we use? What should be the sample size, or how many levels? Here we had a sample size of 7 bits, a maximum of 127 or 128 levels. Here we had a sample size of 4 bits. To determine a good sampling rate, then there's some theorems that tell us if we know something about the analog signal and the frequency components in that analog signal. Remember, analog signals are made up of multiple sine components and they have therefore different frequencies. Nyquist's sampling theorem tells us if we sample twice the highest frequency signal component, then that's sufficient. We don't have to sample any higher. In other words, if the highest frequency component is B, we sample at 2B. If our highest frequency component is 100 Hz, we should sample, or we don't need to sample any more than at 200 Hz. That just gives us a guideline as to what is a reasonable sample. What is a good number of levels? And in practice, what is a good sampling rate? Well, there are many trade-offs, or the many different values, depending on our applications. I'll show you some examples in a moment. And like we've said, low sample rates, small sample sizes lead to poor voice or in general audio reproduction at the receiver. High sample rates and large sample sizes give us better reproduction, but higher transmission data rates are needed. We need to transmit. That's the trade-off. Let's play several different examples and see if we can recognize the difference in terms of the quality. Let's set this up. This is just a website. There's a link to it on our webpage. This is a website that gives some sample or example audio, some files that we can play, at different sampling rates and using different sampling methods. So PCM is a common sampling method, but there are others. So it gives some different values or different examples here. For example, the top one and the first one will play is saying it's using PCM, our normal approach, where we just take a sample and record a value. 16-bit sample sizes. So each sample produces 16 bits. This one produced 7 bits. In this real case, it produces 16 bits. And the sampling rate is 11 kilohertz approximately. 11,000 samples or 11,025 samples per second. It therefore requires a bit rate of 176 kilobits per second. Or another way to look at it, 1 minute of audio at this sampling rate and sampling size requires 1.2 megabytes. I think it's, is it megabytes or megabits? Might be megabits of data. And compare that to a different approach. Here's a typical or an old mobile phone sampling method, GSM algorithm. 8 kilohertz is a sampling rate. It produces a bit rate of 13 kilobits per second. Therefore, the same amount of audio encoded with this method requires just 117 kilobits. Much less than this, about 10 times less. So this one, so where are we? Sorry, 102. This one is much better in terms of using the network resources. This requires 102 kilobits per call, or per 1 minute. This one requires 1.2 megabits. Let's try and see if we can recognize the difference in quality by playing those. If this works. We'll play the first one, which is the high or the 11 kilohertz sampling rate, 16-bit sample size.
Thank you for installing Express Dictate. You will find Express Dictate will improve the way you dictate by letting you dictate when you're away from the office, send your dictation to your typist immediately over the internet, and keep track of your work in the typing queue.
We're trying to now compare that to the next one in terms of the quality. We'll play it again in a moment. Let's try the GSM one.
Thank you for installing Express Dictate. You will find Express Dictate will improve the way you dictate by letting you dictate when you're away from the office, send your dictation to your typist immediately over the internet, and keep track of your work in the typing queue. Thank you for installing Express Dictate. You will find Express Dictate will improve the way you dictate by letting you dictate when you're away from the office, send your dictation to your typist immediately over the internet, and keep track of your work in the typing queue.
So I think you can pick up that one played there is better than the previous one. So, or the first one we played, and I just replayed it then, has better quality at the receiver than the other one. That's what we're trying to show, that with the larger number of samples and the larger sample size, the one we just played then, gives us higher quality at the receiver. So it's the same input audio. It was recorded using those two different approaches, and we've just played what the receiver would hear. So we need to, well, when choosing methods to transmit multimedia applications, we need to make some trade-off there between quality and bit rate required. There are others on that website that you can compare. Some are easy to distinguish, some are not so easy in terms of quality. So, that's a main issue that we have to deal with audio and in particular voice communications. If we talk about in general audio communications, so voice is just a subset of audio communications. Voice is when people are talking. But also audio includes transmission of, for example, music across a communications network. non-voice audio communications. Same concepts apply. We need to deal with those same issues, that same trade-off. Except music generally needs, or listeners of music generally require higher quality output than people listening to voice. When we listen to voice, we're trying to simply understand the information that person is conveying. We don't care so much about the output or the quality. We just want to make sure we can understand them. But when we listen to music, we want to recognize the different quality, the different frequencies, so on, and the dynamic range there. We'd expect higher quality output when we listen to music. As a result, using the same concepts, music generally has a larger bandwidth requirement than voice. Or in practice, people, if you want to transmit 1 minute of voice so that someone at the receiver can understand, you can use much lower quality than if you'd want to transmit 1 minute of music to someone. Other than that, the same issues arise. One more example before we move to video. Actually, maybe we don't have it. I'll show you the example later. I have it on a slide. I just want to list some typical data rates of different codecs, but we have that on a slide later. Let's look at video. And video communications is... We often, when we watch video, we think of two things. There's the audio part and the visual, the actual video part. So the audio part, when we're watching a video, has the same concepts that we just talked about. But in addition, there's the images which are moving. So what is video? It's a set of images which represent scenes in motion. The still images are often called frames. So what a video is simply displaying a frame, a still image, and then changing that at a regular rate or at a high rate such that it looks like motion is occurring. And of course, video is often accompanied by audio. What are the issues with transmitting video, or how much information is contained in a video? See, what do we need to transmit? Well, it depends upon how big the frame is, or the resolution of that frame. Remember, the frame is just a still image, just one image. So that image has a particular size, X by Y, and each pixel in that image represents a colour. So to represent a particular colour, we use some binary value. So the frame... Well, the frame size depends upon the width and height of that frame and where that is measured in the number of pixels, so X pixels across and Y pixels down, where each pixel or each dot represents some colour, and the depth, how much depth in the colour determines or is measured by the number of bits per pixel. So if we had black and white, each pixel has either a value of 0 or 1. Because with black and white, a pixel can either be black or white. So we could use one binary value to represent that. 0 for black, 1 for white. If we have 16-bit color, it means each pixel is represented by a 16-bit binary value. So the number of possible colors in that image with 16-bit color is 2 to the power of 16. 24-bit color, we have 2 to the power of different colors possible per pixel. So the color depth determines the number of bits per pixel, and the size of that image determines the number of pixels we have. Frame size, we can work out the frame size. And of course, video is not just a still image, it's a still image changing over time to represent some motion. And therefore, how often do we change the frames? Well, that's the frame rate. And to make our eyes think that we can see motion, about 15 frames per second is needed. So to give the illusion that something is moving by just taking frames and changing them, about 15 frames per second is sufficient. Most video standards use around 24 or 30 frames per second. To represent higher, or to represent scenes where there's a lot of motion, you could use more frames per second. So these are the factors that impact the amount of information contained in a particular video. So we have the same issues with video. We care about quality and the amount of information we need to transmit. The more color depth, the better the quality it is. That is, color, or having 16-bit color is better than black and white. Having 24-bit color is potentially better than 16-bit color. So having more color depth is better. Having more frames per second is generally better because we can represent higher motion. And having a larger image means we can view the image or view the video on a larger screen. But of course, all of those give better quality but require more information to be transmitted. An issue that arises both with audio and video is compression. That is, we did some calculations of how much information is needed to be transmitted. We can reduce that by compressing it, using algorithms to, instead of transmitting all bits, take just some algorithm that manipulates those bits and transmit many less bits. We compress that. Some examples, we're not going to go through compression algorithms, but some examples that you may see. PCM voice with 8 kilohertz sampling rate, 8 bits per sample requires 64 kilobits per second. This is the raw data rates needed. So one voice call using this approach, 64 kilobits per second is needed. Audio, this is, I think, the audio used on a CD. If you buy a CD, not MP3, but a CD audio, 44 kilohertz is the sampling rate. 16 bits per channel, because we have stereo, we have two channels, left and right. So 16 bits per sample, 44,000 samples per second, two channels, gives us 1.4 megabits per second. That's the normal quality of audio on a CD. If we talk about video and use TV as an example, digital TV, standard definition, although there are variations, an example, the size of the image, 720 by 576 pixels, 24-bit color, so every pixel is represented by a 24-bit value, and 25 frames per second. So we have that motion from changing. Gives us 248 megabits per second to be transmitted. That's simply calculated by 720 times 576 times 24, which gives us the number of bits per frame, times by 25, which gives us the number of bits per second, because every frame, 25 per second, gives us a total of 248 million bits per second. That's what needs to be transmitted across our network if we want to stream standard definition digital TV across our network. High definition up to 1.2 gigabits per second. That's the raw data rate required. Compression is often used to reduce the capacity that we need for transmission and also for storage. So with compression, we can reduce the amount that we need to send across the network as well as the amount that we need to store on our disk. There are two types of compression, lossy and lossless. Lossy is when we take our original raw data, compress it. When we decompress, with lossy, when we decompress or uncompress, we have lost some of the original information. And therefore the quality is going to be poorer. Lossless, we compress our raw data. When we decompress that, we get the original raw data back. We do not lose any information. So the quality is maintained. Lossy compression can generally compress much more than lossless. So for an example, if we have our standard definition TV, which requires 248 megabits per second to transmit that TV across our network. Then if we transmit that from our source A across our network B to B, if we have a capacity of 1 gigabit per second, we can transmit four channels or four videos at the same time. If it was TV, we could transmit four channels at the same time across that network. Here we need 248 megabits per second for one video. We could send four videos at the same time across if we had a capacity of that network of 1 gigabit per second. With compression, we can reduce the size that needs to be transmitted. So with lossy compression, for example, different algorithms can be applied. Let's take an example where we can compress down to 10% of the original size, which means we take our original raw data, 248 megabits per second, and after it's compressed, it's down to 24.8 megabits per second. 10% of the original size. That's good compression. We've reduced it by a factor of 10. Now we can transmit 40 capacity of 1 gigabit per second. Each TV channel or TV or video in the format of standard definition TV requires 24 megabits per second. We can send 40 videos or 40 channels at the same time. So that's the benefit of compression there. Except with lossy compression, the quality is reduced compared to. Because with lossy compression, what we do is we take the raw data, the algorithm that compresses it, we lose some of that data when we uncompress. So when we play it back at B, so we receive the compressed data, when we uncompress at B and play it back on our viewer, then not all of the original data is there. As a result, we lose some quality. Less compression, we don't lose any information, but we cannot compress it as much. If, for example, we could compress our standard definition TV to 50% of its original size, we'd get half of this. After compressing, every TV channel would require 124 megabits per second to be sent. We send it across our 1 gigabit per second link. We can support 8 channels. And the quality is the same here. So there's the trade-off that we have when we use different compression techniques. The amount of compression, the numbers I've just made up, 10%, 50%. It depends upon many factors. It depends upon the particular algorithm being used, and it depends upon the data that we're compressing. Is it video, audio, what type of video? For example, high motion video, like a sports scene, cannot be compressed as much as low motion video, such as someone talking on the news. Because the way that video compression works is they look at the difference between the between subsequent frames. With high motion video, one frame is going to be, there's going to be a large difference to the next frame with high motion. With low motion video, one frame is going to be very similar to the next frame. And therefore, instead of transmitting the entire frame, just transmit the differences of the frames. Therefore, if there is a small difference, we can compress much more. With high motion, there's a large difference between frames and we cannot compress as much. So the amount of compression depends upon what algorithms are used and what type of data is used. But just to illustrate the concepts that we can compress our raw data, there is lossy compression. When we think of compression, we often use lossy compression for audio and video, but there's also lossless compression. When we compress a file, which one do we use? Lossy or lossless? You make an archive of all your files and submit to me for your assignment. Lossy or lossless compression? You use zip or RAR? What are you using? Lossy or lossless? He's saying lossy. Anyone? Lossless. Hands up for lossy. 1, 2. Hands up for lossless. One person said it. 2, 3 to 2. These two are correct. When you compress your data, you don't want to lose any information. I've got a file, just a text file. I compress that. Say it's originally 1 megabyte. I compress it down to 100 kilobytes. When I uncompress, I want to get the exact 1 megabyte at the output. So with encrypting data, files for example, we use lossless. But when encrypting audio and video, we can use lossy compression. Because as we've said at the start, with audio and video, if we lose some data, we can still play back that audio and video. It results in a reduction of the quality at the receiver, but it still may be acceptable by the user. So that's this loss tolerant nature of audio and video applications. Data applications like file transfer are not tolerant of losses. And I think the last slide gives a list of just some common codecs. And these are the things for a general term for the software and hardware, or even does the conversion from analog to digital. Also refers to compression methods used and the different formats of the source. So when you hear of a term of a codec, it usually refers to many different algorithms, including a compression algorithm and a modulation algorithm like PCM or something else. Some examples. in terms of voice, that is transmitting voice across a real network. Then the standards organization ITU has created many different standards and given them numbers. G711 is the base standard for generating voice. It uses pulse code modulation, 8,000 samples per second, 8 bits per sample, giving us 64 kilobits per second. But there are other standards use different modulation techniques, delta modulation, resulting in using different sample sizes, different sampling rates, and different data transmission requirements. GSM, for example, or the original GSM for transmitting from a mobile phone required 14 kilobits per second. So just some examples. In terms of audio, if we're talking about music, for example, we know of MPEG, which is the standards organization or the group that creates the standards, and there are different variations of MPEG. MPEG-3 or MP3 is one lossy encoding. So it uses lossy compression. So it encodes the audio and also compresses that audio. And that's why we can get, that's why we can have a song in MP3 of several megabytes, whereas in original CD quality audio, it would be tens of megabytes. So there are different methods for encoding audio. Some audio for, not just for music, but for video. There are some lossless audio codecs as well. So different lossless audio codecs, which result in larger quality file, a larger size files, but better quality at the receiver. When you play back an MP3, compared to playing back a FLAC encoded song, this one will sound better in terms of the audio quality, but it will be a much larger file. And video, there are different codecs for video, and some of the techniques. For example, VCD, there's MPEG-1, MPEG-2 for DVDs. MPEG-4, H.264 is used for, which is a variation of MPEG-4 used for Blu-ray. So there are different codecs which deliver different qualities or have different trade-offs of the quality of the output produced. And of course also include compression. And some of the things, the other things you may have seen, like AVI, what's called container formats. They don't specify a particular codec. Information using different codecs can be stored in one of these container formats. So you can have MPEG-2 inside an AVI file, or you can have MPEG-4 inside an AVI file. So there's a slight difference there. They're not codecs, they're what's called container formats. Last slide for today, for this morning. So just some of the requirements, and this afternoon we'll demonstrate some of these requirements. So what do we require in terms of our normal measures of network performance? Data rate, errors, delay, jitter. Well, voice and audio applications normally require data rates or consume data rates of about 10 up to 100 kilobits per second. So if you want to transmit voice over a network, you need in the order of tens of kilobits per second. If you want to transmit music, you need tens to perhaps hundreds of kilobits per second to get reasonable quality output that a user will accept. So if you want to listen to streaming radio online, then that streaming radio is going to be taking up or consuming about 100 kilobits per second. It will vary. So, because there's more information than video, both, in fact, audio require hundreds of kilobits per second up to tens of megabits per second, depending upon the quality that we want to see, especially the size that we want to reproduce. In terms of how many errors can they tolerate, that is, we transmit our we transmit our video from the source across our network. Some of the packets are lost in the network and do not get to the receiver. That we have errors, we lose data. How much can we tolerate? Well, there's no fixed numbers, but we can usually tolerate a small number of errors and still play back the audio and video, and it depends upon the codec being used. The codecs are usually smart enough. If we lose some bits, they'll try and guess what those bits were based on other bits. And often that would be unnoticeable by the user viewing that video or listening to that audio. So we usually can tolerate a small number of errors. We usually avoid retransmission schemes. That is, we transmit our data. If there are errors recognized, we don't ask for a retransmission of that audio. The reason is that we want to minimize the delay. If we ask for a retransmission, then we have to send a response back and then wait for the retransmission. That adds delay. So most audio-video applications do not use retransmission schemes. They may use forward error correction. Include extra information in the source data transmitted, such that if there are errors, we can correct them at the receiver. A large number of errors will lead to a drop in quality at the receiver, up to a point where the receiver can no longer display what's being received. Delay. With interactive applications, a conversational application between people, for example, then there are strict delay requirements. For a voice call, usually about less than 150 milliseconds is okay. A delay of 100 milliseconds, the two people will not notice. 150 to 400, usually they'll notice, but they'll be able to still converse, still talk. Greater than half a second, and it starts to become unusable. And it depends on what the users are trying to communicate, but that's some typical values of what's acceptable for delay in voice applications or interactive applications. Streaming, where we're sending video or audio in one direction, could tolerate larger delays. And we'll explain how we can use buffers. Jitter. Usually we need low jitter to give smooth playback of audio and video. What we'll do this afternoon is illustrate some of these performance requirements by displaying a video and see what it looks like when we vary the packet loss and vary the delay. And then we'll move on and also talk a little bit about the assignment with some demonstrations. So enough for this morning.